Life Audio.
Leverage the gifts, the talents, and the abilities that we have been given and that we have developed over time. How do we leverage those for the benefit of others? How do we take what was once maybe a previous life? I know a lot of folks who are in the military, they look at their pre-civilian life, their time in the military as a different life, right? How do we take that different life, those different life skills, and leverage those to help others in this new place? I think so many people struggle just with transition. They struggle from moving from one place to another, from one job or career to another, from one focus of their attention, perhaps in a relationship or somewhere else, to something else. And in the process of that transition, they get lost. How do we take what we knew, what we learned, what we grew through, what we experienced, how do we take that and leverage it in a new place? I look forward to sharing that with you as I share this interview with my guest today, JP Cervantes. We'll be back in just a minute to share that interview.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hello and welcome to the March or Die Show today. Very glad to have you joining me. And I am very excited to be able to share this interview with you. This is an interview I have been trying to set up for quite some time. And I say have been trying to. That's on me, not on JP, who I'll be interviewing. Scheduling and so forth took a long time. We finally got it done. And man, it is fantastic. So helpful. Look forward to sharing that with you. Before we jump into that, though, if you have not yet subscribed to the podcast, please go ahead and subscribe. Take some time to do that right now. You can hit the follow button or the subscribe button, whatever it is on your platform of choice. Please check that out. And then take some time, go over to jeremystalnecker.com. jeremystalnecker.com. You can find everything you would possibly want to know and more about me, my bio information, my social contact information. My blog is there, other podcasts I'm involved with. Please go and check that out. And that would be fantastic. So much going on all of the time. And I just want to keep you in the loop. There's also a newsletter that you can sign up for. So please check that out. Today's guest is JP Cervantes. Many of you would not be familiar with JP. Served in the United States military, was a Green Beret in the Army, distinguished career, retired. And then after a process of recovery and some things that he needed to do post-retirement to really get back on his feet, and he talks about that in this interview, he started his own company and then started a nonprofit that works to highlight the problem of veteran suicide, but also more than just talking about the problem, raising money in a way that can be helpful to so many organizations who are working to combat that. An incredible story, a story, and I love stories like his, because it's a story of incredible military service, a transition that wasn't, you know, without its bumps, certainly. It had its ups and its downs. It was a difficult transition, But then on the other side of that, he decided he would start a business. He would get involved in some very important causes, started a nonprofit, continued to serve, continued to give back. And these are lessons that all of us need to understand, not just those who served in the military, although that's important. If you're transitioning out of the military, this is a great episode for you. But for all of us, we all know what it is to have found success in one area of life, transitioned out for one reason or another, struggled to get our footing, and are now looking around, trying to figure out where we're going to continue to serve. This is a great episode. Really appreciate this conversation and look forward to sharing this with you. Please enjoy and appreciate and learn from this interview with J.P. Cervantes. J.P. Cervantes, thanks for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you for the invite.
We've been talking off and on, texting off and on for a while, finally settled on time, so thanks for doing it. It's awesome to see you kind of in person, like virtual in person, which I think nowadays is as close to in person as you can get. So, so super cool. I want to start. We were introduced through a mutual friend, and he said, I've got a buddy, JP, you've got to talk to him. And it would have been like bad for me if I hadn't talked to you, right? Like, he was like, no, you've got to talk to him. Like, stop what you're doing right now. Reach out to him. And that's how we connected. You've got an amazing story. I'd love to just start with that. Just tell us your story. You've served in the military. You've done a lot of other stuff, though. Kind of maybe a little bit growing up and how you got eventually into the military, and then what your life is, where your life has taken you since then.
Okay, so just long story short, I grew up in Puerto Rico, was born and raised there. And since I was a little kid, you know, I always liked the military, especially when I saw the movie Rambo, of course.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah. How many guys went into the military because of Rambo? A lot. Yeah.
That's
and then
right.
We're disappointed, right?
I go like, man, I don't got those muscles. Where he got those from? But anyways, ever since I was a little kid, I joined the civilian patrol. So, you know, I did that. I was very, very invested into that. So that gave me that leadership, the hunger for leadership and instructor and things like that. So I really liked that a lot. And then when I went to college, I joined the Air Force ROTC.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to switch to Army ROTC. Then I decided to just, you know, after my second year, I go like, you know what? I know I only got 2 years left, but that's it. I'm signing up. I'm going.
Yeah.
So I went and signed up. I went infantry, went to the 82nd. That was my first duty station. Then I was stationed in Panama for a year. After that, that's when we shut down Panama. Everybody started crying. Oh my God, I gotta leave Panama. and then I, from there, I went to the Q course, went to Special Forces. That's what I finished and did most of my career in Special Forces and 7th Special Forces Group. And that's where I met Tom.
Yeah. So a lot of people listening to this would be veterans. Certainly a lot would not, though. Talk about, so when you say the Q course, you pass over that, like, and then I went to this, like, weekend thing, and then we moved on, right? Like, what you did was really hard, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. So here's one thing that I think people not in the military struggle to understand is why people, men and women, leave the military, leave uniform service, and particularly when they come from a combat arms MOS, you know, they served in the infantry or they served in one of the other combat MOSs, occupational specialties. They leave that and then they find themselves with like no purpose, nothing hard to do, nothing to accomplish. I think civilians like don't make the connection between what you did there was really hard and now life is just kind of empty. It doesn't have the same push or the motivation or the drive. Can you talk about like the Q course? Talk about what it means to be a Ranger and why I'll say why you're doing what you're doing now, right? Because this is kind of what carried you to that place. But talk about just how hard that is. I don't think people get that.
So in order to be a Green Beret, a Special Forces, you have to go through what is called Special Forces Assessment and Selection. So that's a 3-week process of mind games, physical, lack of sleep. You know, it's like the Navy SEALs call their Hell Week. Everybody's familiar with Hell Week. Yeah. But we got Special Forces Assessment and Selection. And let me tell you, they weed a lot of people out. When I went, of course, I went to the last hard class. That's what everybody says, right? So when I went through, I want to say I went on a winter time and they didn't take, I wouldn't say they didn't take a lot of people in selection. I would say not a lot of people apply during winter time.
Yeah.
So I ended up having like 180 something people in my class. and I remember correctly, of about 49 got selected.
Wow. Yeah.
On only like 60 something finish. I mean, we lost a lot of people, day one.
Yeah.
I mean, we lost people to orientation day sitting in a classroom.
Put it like, that nope.
way. They're like, no, this is not for me.
Not for me.
so, you know, it is hard. It is mental. You know, you have to know yourself. You get to know yourself a lot. You know, you're like, you know, what drives you? Do you really want this? Or are you here just because you just wanted to sign a packet and go like, ooh, I went and did this cool thing. But how bad do you want it? You know? And that's something that a lot of people don't understand. It's like the pain. I seen people finishing selection with a broken ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, their ankle is swollen. They got to cut their boots so that they can continue to rock.
Yeah.
And that's, you wanted it. Now, is it smart? I didn't say we were smart. I said you really want it.
Right.
It's something that I think a lot of people don't understand is that pride, right? So when I went there, I was an E5. I was a team leader / squad leader in the infantry in Panama. And I went over there, and a lot of people go like, hey, JP, you know what? Are you going to finish this? I'm like, listen, I'm going to finish it.
Yeah.
One, two things are going to happen. One, they kick me out early because, you know, or two, I'm going to finish and they don't select me. But there's no way, that pride that you have, no way I'm going to go back to Panama and face my soldiers, which I tell them all the time, how you got to push yourself, how you got to believe in yourself, and then go over there and say, oh, no, I quit.
Yep.
I just couldn't do that. You know, and that's the pride that we have that I think a lot of people in the civilian world don't have, because I've seen it a lot. They're like, oh, no, it's OK for me to say I don't want to do that, or I'm tired of that. You know, I just quit. What all I do is look for another job in our path, in the military career. Yes, you can find another job, but then I always tell people those things will follow you. People will remember you later. Oh, I remember that guy. He's the one that quit, or he's the one that did that. And your reputation and your name is everything in the military.
Yeah, that's right. And it does. It follows you your entire career.
It's funny
how people always remember you. Next weekend, I've got the 20th reunion, 20th anniversary of the Battle of Baghdad, April 10th, 2003. So my battalion's coming together. We're going to do a big reunion. It's pretty neat, but it's just like struck me several times over the last few weeks seeing the list of people that are attending. I still think of them as like what they were 20 years ago, right? Like this guy is Lance Corporal, like screwing this thing up. Like he just retired as a Sergeant Major. Like he figured some stuff out. But it's funny how your reputation, it absolutely follows you. People remember, you know, what you used to be, not what you are right now sometimes, unfortunately.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and I see that a lot. I see how a lot of people, like you were saying, you get out of the military and you're used to go 100 miles per hour, and all of a sudden you get into this environment where people are not in a rush to get anything done.
Yeah.
If they get it done, they get it done. There's no consequences if they don't, and we're so used to the consequences. You know, you're there on time, or if you don't get it done, there's consequences. Well.
Yeah.
That's not there in a lot of the civilians, you know, civilian jobs out there or everything else. And it just drives me crazy. I own my own company and I got to deal a lot of times with other companies. And I tell them, and that's why a lot of times when they say, oh, we're going to share this work. I'm like, no, you want to subcontract that to me? We'll do it because we'll do it our way and make sure it gets done right. If we do it together, I'm going to get frustrated.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to start yelling at your people, and then somebody's going to get fired. And it's not going to be me because I own my own company.
Right. Right. Where does that drive come from? So I talked about motivation a couple episodes ago on my podcast, and I feel like we are living at a time where there's a lot of motivational talk, right? There's no shortage of like podcasts that are like super motivational. You need to try harder and get up earlier and do more and you'll be successful, which isn't true. I mean, it's just not true, right? But motivation is everything. And people generally try to find the motivation to do the thing they know they're supposed to do. And what I recognized in the military was that if you are waiting for motivation, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. You have to do the right thing. And even that external motivation of having someone scream at you or push you or whatever. I was a Marine, went to Marine Corps Officer Candidate School. I'm not comparing that to any other school. I'm just, that's my experience, right? But one of the interesting things that Marine Corps Officer Candidate School does is it provides the option for drop on request, just like a lot of the other service schools. So at any moment in the training, you can say, I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. And it was crazy to me as like a 19-year-old kid, right, going through Officer Candidate School. That was my dream. They're going to have to like drag me out of here dead. That's the only way I'm done, right? And I got these college educated men and women who decided to do this, who are going to Division I schools, playing Division I sports, and they drop on request. So motivation has to be more than just like, you know, the carrot out in front of you or someone screaming at you or pushing you or even pride. What motivates you? Like, where does that come from to finish when it would be easier and no one's going to question you if you stop?
So I want to say it was my upbringing. I want to think it was the way I grew up, the way my mother raised me, right?
Yep.
There was no plan B for anything. Mm. It was, that's plan A, you're going to go with it, and you're going to finish it no matter what, right? And I think that made it for me. It was that structure in my household. But one thing that I like to tell people, you know, I do a lot of talks in you know, for veterans and stuff like that. I try to tell people all the time, it's like motivation can come from anywhere. Like you can look at, you know, I want to look at this video before I get motivated, right? Like in Iraq, if we had a big up coming up, we watched Team America. That was our motivation. That was our motivational movie before we went out, right?
Yeah, sure.
Or Jack Bauer after we get done with with the mission, right? But the thing is, you can have all these factors around you that are bringing that motivation, but if you don't have discipline, none of that matters.
Yeah,
all right.
I
think a lot of people confuse the word motivation with discipline. You can be not motivated at all. You don't want to, like, I do a 222 mile rock march. You know how many times in the morning I wake up and I go like, I don't think I want to start again today, but that discipline that I got to get up, I got to get ready, I got to go and have breakfast, meet the team and go to the start point and continue for another 22 miles that day. Is the discipline, is not motivation. Because trust me, I was not motivated a bunch of times, but the discipline drove me to get to where I needed to be. And then along the way, that motivation kicks in because, you know, like you're supposed to be.
Right.
You were disciplined enough to make it there. And then all of a sudden, everybody else start bringing you up. That's where the motivation comes from, knowing that you're there doing the right thing.
That's good. Yeah, I think we have it upside down, right? We hope that motivation will push us to a place of discipline. And that's just not how it works.
That's
discipline
not how it works.
First, and then with the discipline comes the motivation. We talked a little while ago. I did a 100-mile race earlier. It was in February. And, man, there are moments where you're like, I don't want to do this anymore, but I can't quit. Like, my family's over there, and I told people I was doing this. And like you said, I mean, I would – my dad's voice in my head going, look, you can do whatever you want when this is over, but you said you were going to start, so you're going to finish, right? Like, that's just, it doesn't matter what it is. You gave your word. But that discipline, it does turn into motivation because as you get closer, there's a motivation. There's also some pride. But you have to go through those valleys, those like dark valleys of I'm doing this because I said I would, and I'm just going to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And it all works together. So many people, they miss the real motivation because they just don't have the discipline. And
that is correct.
What a sad thing, right?
And then you had that false motivation, right? There's no discipline there. It's just you falsely motivating yourself, and eventually you're going to quit anyways because you got no discipline.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're doing anything worthwhile, that false motivation is going to take you about three steps. You're like, I'm out. I don't care anymore. Man. You learn that, you build that in the military, and then outside of the military, you did what I encourage all veterans to do. That is to, A, get a job, right? But you decided to start your own company so that you could control that. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about what you do with your company. But then the I'll say nonprofit because it's a word people understand. The nonprofit work that you do work with sex trafficking. And then the ruck march that you just mentioned. Can you talk about all those pieces and why you decided to put those pieces into your life? You could have, I'm assuming, taken, you know, retirement or VA benefits or whatever and done what a lot of veterans do and said, you know, I did my time. But you decided to continue serving. Talk about that a little bit and then the motivation or the why behind that.
So, you know, I went like, a lot of veterans, right? You retire, you go through a few years of struggle, right? Yeah. Trying to figure out, finding your new passion. So to me, it was, there was a lot of physical, right, that recovery that I needed to do from accidents and injuries I received in the military. But once I did that, I was like, so what now? So I started my own company. I started doing just what everybody else does, right? Training with the military, role player support. I was a role player for MARSOC, a G chief over there in their Derna Bridge. And so I did a lot of stuff. But like when I started doing a lot of those contract work and in role player mentoring, I started finding out that, wow, I have a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge that I can actually still pass to these guys. I don't have to be in uniform, and have soldiers under my command for me to be able to pass this knowledge and experience. So let's get that out there, because if they remember at least one thing that I taught them during combat, and that little one thing save a life, then it was worth it. It was worth it. And I'm still in contact with a lot of those students that came through Derna Bridge. They hit me up all the time and they tell me, hey, JP, remember that little lesson that we learned the hard way? Yeah, right. It happened. I'm like, right. Well, I'm glad that you learned that in training environment and didn't have to learn it in real world, because, you know, casualties. But so I started liking that. I go like, you know what? I like this. I'm going to get more involved with passing my knowledge, training other people, making sure that even starting a business, people came to me all the time, even though that I'm not a business guru, right? But they came over to me, hey, JP, I want to talk to you about business. I'm like, oh, I'm not the right person, but I can tell you what I had to do to start my business and the things I learned along the way, and probably that can help you get started, right? So I started doing that as well. And then through my business, we ended up getting involved in human trafficking recovery operations. And once we did the first one, I didn't want to get involved in that, to be honest with you, because we were just doing a kidnapping for ransom recovery and hostage rescue overseas and stuff like that. So when we did the first human trafficking recovery, the satisfaction that everybody got from that little girl saying thank you, you know, for giving me my life back, basically. At that point, something clicked, and I said, this is something that needs to be done. It's not getting done enough. So then shortly after that, we started getting calls for recoveries. And so far, we've been doing it for 3 years, and so far we've recovered 82 people from human trafficking. I say people because we got mostly our children, but we also have adults in human trafficking, right? So we recover a few adults as well. But and these are all, you know, private contracts. People go like, I want you to find my children, because we just don't have the money to go and do it on our own. It's an expensive operation. But and then we get it done not for profit. We just charge for expenses. And then everybody's a volunteer to go for months in doing investigation and finally finding the people and rescuing them along with the locals. So that became a passion. So, and then I go like, okay, well, there's a lot of things that I have learned in these recovery operations that a lot of people don't know at home, right? Because we're doing all this overseas. So let's start now teaching people about human trafficking, our experiences, the things that we've seen, the stories from the people that we recover, how did they get involved in human trafficking? So that's another thing I started doing. And then I ended up linking up with North Star Ministries. I'm one of their board members. And they started a nonprofit for human trafficking education. So that's another thing I do. I give talks about human trafficking and things like that. I just got a phone call yesterday about another organization that wants me to jump on board with them as well. And started doing that. And along with, you know, and then while I was doing the human trafficking, you know, it's a lot, bro. While I was doing the human trafficking, one of my passions have always been, suicide in military first responders. We started losing a lot of people to suicide, and I got involved with that as well. And then I started a nonprofit for that as well. So, you know, it's like, and going back to your question is, you can still give back.
Yeah.
After you got out, you just got to find what your passion is. I know guys that were hard charging operators, and their passion now is you know, making soap. And that's fine. If that makes you happy, if the aroma of soap and flowers, you know, is what gives you your relaxation.
Yeah, sure.
That is fine, but you have to find something to do. Because if not, what's going to end up happening is you're going to die sad.
Yeah.
Every day you're going to be asking yourself, like, what can I be doing? You know what? I'm just going to be a slob and be on my couch and not do anything. But you know what? But that's not who you are. And the problem is when we get out of the military, a lot of times we forget who we are, right? And I tell people all the time, you might be retired for 25 years or maybe got out of the army 20 years ago. Don't forget who you are. You're still a bad mofo, all right? You're still a badass. You still got knowledge. And that knowledge, it was given to you for free. You got paid to learn all that in the military. Yep. Now, and I tell people, the military put hundreds and thousands of dollars, and depending on what you were, like, I want to say millions of dollars on training for you. What are you doing with that investment?
Right.
Put that investment into work.
Man, those are such good words, man. I've had this conversation with a lot of people over the years about, like, it seems like the path that we're on life, right, is often disjointed. Like, these pieces don't all fit together. As a Christian, I believe that God is, you know, over everything, that he puts the pieces in place, and our job is not to figure it all out. Our job is just to, you know, steward over it or manage it or take care of it, right? Like we're given this thing that you just mentioned, and now it's my responsibility to do something with it. And it's nuts to see men and women who've served in the military, and this could be anyone, not just in the military. I mean, this could be in any vocation, with so much skill and so much knowledge and so much opportunity. And then when they stop using it, they wonder why they don't have purpose anymore and why they feel depressed and why am I like this? Why can't I go back? Well, maybe you learned all of those things and those gifts were given to you so that you can use them in a different place.
Correct.
And that's exactly what you're doing now. And finding that purpose, really not in something brand new, but in just leveraging what I've always had and what I've learned and what I've gained in a new place, helping little kids. I mean, it's crazy to think, right? Like, the military taught you how to do something that probably often did not involve helping little kids.
Correct.
But you're leveraging that for something, I would argue, to a bigger purpose than you even had, you know, in uniform. I don't know. But the importance of giving back, the importance of continuing to serve, it's vital. I don't think it's optional. I think if you're going to live, it's vital.
Yeah, yes, it is. You have to do that. You have to continue to serve. You have to continue to give. You know, I get all the time people that tell me, hey, JP, I'm depressed, you know, I'm suicidal, this and that. Of course, I talk to them. I give them different options, you know, put them in touch with resources. But I always tell them, and they're like, well, and nobody helps me. Nobody helps me. I always tell them, brother, you gotta want to help yourself first.
Yeah.
Because nobody can help you if you don't want to help yourself. So if you don't want to go out there and give back, nobody can make you do it. You have to find it. You have to go out there and say, okay, I got skills. What are things that I like? They don't have to be necessarily aligned with the military or what you did in the past.
Sure.
But you still have leadership skills that you acquire that you can use anywhere.
Yes.
And with that, find your passion, find something. Now, if you don't want to work, you don't have to work. I understand a lot of people don't want to work. I don't want to have a 9-to-5 job, right?
Right.
So
I
pick and choose the contracts that I do. But the thing is, I am still out there and I am still trying to keep my skills sharp.
Yeah.
Because guess what? You never know when you're going to need them again.
Yep.
Right? I mean, the world is crazy. You never know.
It's not getting better.
you never know when you're going to need them. So go out there, find something that you can do on your own terms, on your own time. And listen, there's a lot of organizations out there that will welcome you as a volunteer whenever you want to show up and help them. So just find something. Don't say there's nothing for me to do if you don't go out there and try to find something. You know, these days, the power of the internet, just Google search volunteer opportunities in my area, and you're going to find shelters. You know, you can go and walk dogs. That was one of my therapies when I first got out of the military. I went to the shelter, and I took dogs out for a walk in the Little Park. And that's what I did all day. I ended up bringing one home, but that's what I did all day. And there was a therapy. Yeah. That's something that people can do. You know, you can go to the food bank and help organize shelves, get food in the food banks, whatever that might be. You know, they need help. So just because you don't want to work 9 to 5, you don't want to be engaged, you know, have a boss, you can be your own boss. Just go and volunteer, do something, give back. And you never know, you might find that that's your passion. You end up actually going like, hey, I want to work here full time. You guys got a job.
right. Yeah, it's a blessing to not have to make money from a job. And that, the freedom that comes with that is exactly what you said. You can now find what, you know, what gets you excited and what you want to be engaged in and involved in. Just stop sitting on the couch and playing video games. Like, it drives me insane. Like, you were trained by the military to do so many important things, and now your job is, you know, wasting time. Find something to be engaged in. Do something important. And, so many good opportunities.
Yeah, I got a friend of mine that went around different businesses, and he did this for like 4 years. And he goes, hey, listen, I'm retired. I don't need any pay. I'm here because he went to this coffee shop. He's like, I want to learn how to be a barista for the next 3 months. I'm your intern. I'm here for free. Just teach me. And they were like, okay. So they brought him in, you know, and he did that. He's like, got it. I learned how to be a barista. Now I'm going somewhere else. And he went to like a wood shop. He's like, I want to learn how to carve on wood. And he learned that, and he kept going around until he found the one thing that he really liked. And he was like, man, I like this. But he said, but along the way, I acquire all these other skills that I can do whatever I want.
Man, that's so good. So many great opportunities. If we'll, again, push this idea of victimhood aside, right? I'm a victim or whatever. And do that. I mean, what a blessing to be able to do that, to learn, to grow. And so many who retire from the military, and again, this is universally applicable, not just those who are in the military, but so many retire early enough in their lives that they have a lot to give, and there's a lot of opportunity. Talk about the Ruck March for a little while, if you would. That's pretty insane to me. I really like endurance events. I've been involved in a lot of them, but that's crazy. What you guys do is crazy.
Yeah, so it's Let's Walk It Out 222, my Ruck March. It's a nonprofit that I started. It started as an idea of me just opening a GoFundMe. And I tell you why I did 222 miles, because it's really what started this whole thing. As I went around and I talked to a lot of veterans talking about suicide, this and that. And I always talk to them and go like, hey, bro, there's so many people supporting you. Go online. People are doing 22 push-ups a day. I have personally done 2.2-mile runs, you know, with kit, 22-mile run, this and that. And they're all like, yeah. I understand. I appreciate the support, but they don't understand my pain. And they kept going. And all these people out there, they don't understand my pain. And I kept the word pain kept coming up. And I go like, huh? And I'm like, okay, well, how can I mimic that pain, right? Because it's not the same type of pain, right? How can I mimic that pain? And I go like, well, 22 miles? Not really. And I go like, let's add a 2 at the end of that. Let's do a 222 mile, right? And it's going to be painful, right? So we're going to mimic that pain that the veterans or first responder are suffering in silence. And then I go like, okay, well, let's add a rucksack to that. Why? Because I'm carrying the burden with them. I'm showing them that I'm here to carry the burden with you, so you don't have to be alone. So the idea to do that 222 mile came up. It was going to be me bringing my own little tent on my backpack. I walked 22 miles, you know, rock 22 miles, camp somewhere, start the next day again, 22 miles, camp somewhere. Did that to Camp Lejeune and then back to Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Wow.
So, and then few people go like, hey, man, I want to do it with you. And then as it started growing, and this haven't even started yet, right? So as it started growing, people go like, hey, I want to sponsor. You need money? I'm like, well, yeah, we're going to start a GoFundMe. No, I want to be a sponsor. I'm like, okay, well, now we need support, right? Because now we're getting volunteers. So we need support vehicles. We need this and that. So it ended up being so big, we had to actually start an organization, because we did the very first one under the Special Forces Foundation umbrella. And then after that, people came up to me. It's like, hey, JP, you know, the expectation now is like, what? you're going to have to do this every year. People are expecting you to do every year. I'm like, oh, no, this was a one-time right. thing, man.
One time. I'm not doing this again.
So unfortunately, the first year, a few weeks prior, ended up in the hospital for a month. But but the guys went out there. The crew went out there, and they killed it. They did the rock march and got back safe. Yeah. So the second year was last year. And I was able to go out there. People go like, oh, you're not going to bail out again, JP. This was your idea. You're going to suffer. So, you know what? We went out, we did it, and along the way, we encountered so many people that were, first of all, that didn't know how much suicide is affecting our community. And right. so we talked to them along the way, and we educate them along the way. We also found a lot of people that have attempted suicide before, and others that were contemplating suicide and changed their minds because they said, wow, you guys are doing this, and you're not complaining about it. Why am I complaining? So to us, you know, that pain is going to go away with Motrin and a little bit of rest, you know, and I tell people, but what I want you guys to get from this is that not only you're not alone, we're carrying the burden with you. We're willing to take the pain with you, right? Our pain is going to go away, but every day when we're out there rocking in the middle of, you know, 24, whichever road we're at that time, yeah. We know one thing. This is going to end. Mm. It might not end when I want it to, yep. but it's going to end. The same thing is for whatever you're going through in life. Hard times don't last forever. Mm. It's going to end. Now, it might not end when you want it to. It might not be next week. It might take a month. It might take a few years. Who knows? But it's going to end, right? And at the end of all of that, it's going to make you better. It's going to make you stronger. Sure. Yep. For example, I got done with that 225, which, by the way, myself and Ryan, our director, were the very first two to finish the whole thing, right? And we made a wrong turn, so instead of 222, we ended up doing 227.
Sounds right. Yeah, sounds right.
I'm still going to complain about those 5 extra miles. But the thing is, we finished that, and trust me, when everything ended, the satisfaction that we endured that was just, I couldn't compare it to anything else. And I tell people, you know what? This is why I do this, because I want you to have the same satisfaction when all the hard times pass and you can see yourself on the other side and you go like, wow, I went through all that and I'm here. Hell yeah. You know, and that's exactly what I'm people to get out of this. And of course, you know, we partner with other nonprofits that deal directly with, you know, providing services for suicide prevention or mental health. So they benefit from this rock march as well.
That's awesome. Where can people learn more about that? Maybe they want to get involved if they're on the East Coast, but maybe they want to give to support it. Where can people find information about that?
Yeah, just find us on letswalkitout.org. It's right there on the web, or you can follow our social media, Let's Walk It Out 222 Mile Rock. That's our Instagram and Facebook. And if you want to get involved, volunteers are always welcome. We soon going to start. Actually, we got 2 people planning right now, one in Georgia and one possibly in Texas, planning our one-day events. So a lot of people want us to bring this event to different places. The problem is, for all the people that are going to come up with the idea, hey, JP, do it where I'm at. This is the problem. It takes about 8 months of coordination.
Right.
For logistics, escorts, you know, we get all the fire departments involved. It's a lot of coordination just for one event, right? This event lasts 10 days. So what we started doing is, like, people who want to run one of these events, right? We can help them do that. And it's a one-day event, 22 miles. And now we can do that one anywhere because it don't take a lot of coordinations like the other one. But so soon those are going to start popping up. So if people follow us or they go to our website, so we're going to start posting locations and dates.
That's awesome. JP, thanks for talking through that. There's so much here. Maybe we can do this again. I appreciate not only what you do, but your ability to explain why you do what you do and to motivate others in the right way, the right kind of motivation to get out there and do something important and do something helpful. So thanks for doing it. And thanks for talking.
Oh, no problem. I really appreciate it.
Very grateful for that interview and just the opportunity to talk through that. Such clarity. I really appreciate that. You did important things in your life. At some point, you were gifted with skills and opportunities, take those, leverage those where you are now, and you will engage once again with that purpose, that direction, that meaning. We talk about hope so often. Get involved. And I've talked to folks who are transitioning out of the military, maybe retirement. I think retiring from a 20-year military career at, you know, age 40 or whatever is a little bit different than retiring after 30 or 40 or more years at a company. But it seems like the feeling of I knew what I was doing, I was important there, I did some things that I really enjoyed, and now I don't know what to do. The feeling is the same, regardless of when you retire. And so many great lessons here. Please take this, share it out with someone that you know, and that would be fantastic. Go over to lifeaudio.com. When you get done, you can find other great podcasts on Life Audio. Please check those out. That would be fantastic. And I will remind you today, as I do every time we talk, when the world around you seems to be falling apart, when things are blowing up, when they are out of control, you only have two choices. You can stay where you are and die. You can do that. Or, better yet, you can march. Thankfully, the choice is always yours. Thank you. I will talk to you next time. Many of our veterans feel they need to fight their battles alone. This self-isolation has led to the staggering statistic of more than 20 veterans taking their lives every day. The mission of Mighty Oaks is to eradicate the veteran suicide epidemic and help our warriors change their legacies. We've been able to help over 4,000 veterans and first responders by equipping them with the tools they need to live the lives they were created to live. Our faith-based, peer-to-peer approach has one of the highest success rates of any program available today, offering hope and understanding to those who need it most. By aligning their lives to biblical principles, these men and women are able to lead their families, their communities, and our nation. It's your generosity that can make a difference in the lives of the men and women who have fought for our country and our freedoms. Now that they're home, don't let them fight alone. Learn more at mightyoaksprograms.org.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stress Less podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.